Soviet Union made much use of women in direct combat roles during the Second World War, an early form of women's liberation and in line with communist principles. This was in direct contrast to Britain, the United States, and Germany, who only allowed women to enlist in non-combat supporting roles. One area in which the Soviet Union heavily relied on women was snipers. The Red Army believed that women were highly suitable for this role, being more patient, careful, and cunning. In February 1942, women between the ages of 16 and 45 were subjected to the military draft. The Red Army created the Central Women's Sniper Training School near Moscow. Students had to be at least 20 years old, fit, had graduated at least 7 of the secondary school classes, and had passed an initial 4-day universal military training. The school would produce 1,061 snipers and 407 instructors.
I am from beyond. Listen, and all you desire will be yours. Welcome to Spider-Dan and the Secret Wars. Prepare for battle.
Do you remember this? This is an obscure one, but on the side of the box, I remember this on my Superman costume, it actually said, "Do not attempt to fly." They printed that as a warning because kids were putting it on and going off the roofs. You know.
Welcome to Prattle World. I am your host, the ever amazing, ever spectacular Spider Dan. And in this podcast, I spotlight entertainment's best kept secrets that a mainstream audience may find boring. And welcome to Comic Observations, where we take a step back and observe comic books and the comic book industry with open eyes. And again, we are back once more for World War II month. And because this particular comic book that we're covering today is all about patience, breathing, waiting for the perfect moment, I decided to bring the two most chaotic podcasters I know to talk about a book about female Soviet Union Red Army snipers from World War II. This is all based on fact and inspired by fact, but it is a fictional comic written by two of my favorite creators, Garth Ennis and Steve Epting, with Elizabeth Breitweiser providing the color art as well. So welcome, Angry Andy, our military advisor and historical expert this month. Welcome back.
Hello, you son of a bitch.
Maybe not quite as chaotic as last week's one, where Andy could only make the last half an hour.
God, no, no. I'm here in full force, fully camoed up, wearing a ghillie suit, and I'm in the trees waiting.
But we're not alone.
Waiting to get you.
Just me. Okay. I mean, I've got a pretty big target with my big melon head, so
you wouldn't
struggle, and I'd absolutely panic and start running and go and try and help people, even though I shouldn't. But we're not alone. We're not alone. We're joined by another female sniper. We are joined by Rhea Carrigan once again, and she is going to give us some insight as well into her thoughts on a comic book that I've not mentioned the title of. Not a massive fan of the title, I'll be honest. It's a bit of a nothing title, I'll be honest. It is the character's lead name. It's Sara, an original graphic novel, I think the subtitle is. But Rhea, welcome.
I'd shoot some Nazis.
How many would you shoot? How many would you kill?
I mean, I'll try and take out quite a lot. Much like many of the women here, I'm like, if I'm going down, give me a few grenades, pull the pins, take out some Nazis. It sounds pretty good to me.
So yeah. Do it. Let's all do it. It's all fun and
fuck games. You, Nazis. Fuck you.
I mean, if there's anybody we can openly kill without any retaliation, surely it's Nazis. Surely
you would. Hope. I mean, there are laws in this day and age.
True. There are laws
even for Nazis.
Stop keeping us on the straight and narrow. Nobody's interested. We just want to go and shoot some Nazis.
I'm just putting in a legal disclaimer again. Yeah. I think I've done several of these since we started.
We're gonna continue. Yes. Also, because this is about the Soviet Union and armies and wars, and there's a lot going on at the moment with that, and me and Andy talked about in the last podcast that there's been quite a lot of movement on that recently. So just so you know, not pro-Russia, by the way.
Well, this is my favourite thing about this. I started reading it and I was like, hold on, am I on the side of the Russians? Oh, I don't know how I feel about that. And that's what's so good about this, that like Sara is a heroic character in the way they're telling the story, but is also a bad person. Yeah. You know, when we start thinking back to world wars and the goodies and the baddies, to be really reductive, and you're suddenly like, oh no, I'm not sure I want to be on the side of Russia. That's pretty bad. But then you are.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's really reductive, everyone. This is what you're getting from me today.
No, I agree though. There's a great swell of ambiguity, moral ambiguity in this, isn't there? You sympathize with obviously the female characters in the comic, but then obviously some of them are just really terrible people, and all they want to do is kill and kill and kill for various reasons, for valid reasons, you can argue as well. And yet they're without sympathy for their enemies, for who they're hunting, and they are hunting them. They're not sort of, you know, fighting on the battlefield. They're hiding and they're sneaking and they're picking them off in droves.
That's what I like about it. It's, you know, we're so used to these war stories where it's the British or Americans and, you know, and they're fighting back, and the killing that they do, the murdering that they do is heroic, and it's in the chaos of battle, or it's by mistake because they still want you to empathize with these people who, even if you are on the good side, you're still going out and committing these atrocities. Yeah. And in this, it is very much not that. Everything is cold and calculated. Everything is, I'm specifically going to go out and kill these people. Some of the, no sympathy for Nazis, but, you know, some people conscripted into being Nazis, you know, and that's so interesting to see that they're telling a war story that also kind of feels like a Western, but also so, as you said, Andy, morally ambiguous, that it's, there are times where I was reading it and I felt conflicted and uncomfortable, and I think that's really enjoyable, if that's the right word, when exploring these sort of stories, because we're so used to Brits, Yanks, goodies, going off killing the Nazis, and we all feel great about it.
There's no trumpets and fanfare at all, and this is the. I was when I was reading it, I was thinking, well, if they were to put this, if this was ever to be sort of adapted or whatever, I don't imagine there'd ever be a score for it. I think it would literally be the calmness and stillness and the quiet, the desolation, you know, the empty spaces, the forests, and those are the things that's the kind of, it'd all be atmospheric. So atmospherically, this has nothing. Even though there are moments of patriotism in there. Some of them do resent that patriotism as well. So yeah, you won't get any of that. You won't get any of the flag waving, the trumpets and things like that in this. It's bleak, isn't it? It's bleak and ultra violent.
And we get that. Yeah, oh yeah, so violent. And we get that Russian patriotism. Ooh, it sounds so, I have trouble saying that word. In terms of, you need to come to me and tell me about your comrades and the things they're doing and the things they're saying. Like, there is no good person here. Like that, the mother figure, I can't remember any of their names, you know, she is asking this tight unit to spy on each other, come and tell her if they're not being patriotic enough.
She's the propaganda, which we see propaganda in Russian person. Stories.
Yes.
It's the political officer. I can't say officer. The political officer is called Riser. She's the pro propagandist. She's like, yes, do it for Mother Russia, kill for Mother Russia. Yeah. You know, kill
and
for the.
Everybody's jaded by that. They're all just like, yeah, sure, we will do Riser. Don't worry, mate.
But this is what I really like about the book, is it's never going like, again, it's never going, we're pro-Russia, we're pro, like, the stuff that Starling is doing at this time and pre the war is just as bad. And we learn that throughout the book, and there's a specific moment we learn about as well, which, you know, kind of colours the way Sara is, or the way she approaches her role in this war, and how she, you know, she's told that these people aren't human beings, they aren't men. They're not hunting men. They're Nazis. And there's a great line where it's like, they've bathed in the motherland's blood up to their bollocks, or something like that. Like, which I think is quite a very kind of visceral kind of image for that. And they're not wrong. But again, like, all the Stalin stuff. I've also this week, I've kind of immersed myself in sniper culture this week. So I've been playing Sniper Elite 4 on the PlayStation. I shot Hitler this week, just to let you know. I got my badge. I got my medal.
Well done.
I also watched Enemy at the Gates that my grandfather provided a badge for. Ed Harris wears a specific sniper badge.
I saw you put that on, and I was like, fucking hell, why have you never told me that?
It's something I was getting around to, but it's just never kind of come up in conversation. Mm-hmm. But I
really like that.
Casually chucked that out in conversation.
Just like, casually, just like, hey, by the way, famous granddad, militarist. But he was quite proud of that because it was quite rare. It was so rare that they actually couldn't get a version of that. I'm not entirely sure which badge, or it may even be a medal, maybe, I'm not sure. But yeah, I also watched The Battle for Sevastopol, which is a Russian film about Ludmila Pavlichenko, who is also known as Lady Death. And she was from the Ukraine as well. And she clocked in at 309 confirmed Nazi kills. Also had a
most in history.
The most ever in history, and who I think kind of this is mostly based on that, and kind of other people like Rosa Shanina, who is also we know a lot about her because she kept a diary against orders. So she kept a full diary, so we know her entire kind of life at war and things, and we know they're all highly decorated. Ludmila got the hero of the Soviet Union award, which is the highest decorated honor you could get. They even used her as a propaganda tool because the Russians were trying to get the US into the war. They were still not involved. They weren't interested. Why should they go spill blood on a foreign battlefield? What's it got to do with them? She met Eleanor Roosevelt and developed this friendship, and they kind of became pen pals and supported each other. A very beautiful like friendship that they had. And she was quite famous in saying that they were doing this speech, and she said, "Gentlemen, I'm 25 years old. I've killed 309 Nazis. Isn't it time you stop hiding behind my back?" And that was one of the kind of the key inspirations for the US joining the war, was her saying that, challenging that kind of macho, "Oh, if a woman can do it, I can kill Nazis too." So again, like her impact on history, not only in combat but outside of it and politically, is quite profound, really.
Her story is incredible. Her story really is incredible. She was training to be a teacher or something, wasn't she?
Yeah, she was going to university. So all of the snipers, the female snipers that were recruited, had to be highly educated. So they had to be, in university at least. They all had to be 25, was 18 to 25. They all had to be physically fit, obviously. And the reason that they were, obviously, Stalin is obviously the communist ideal is that women are equal to everyone else. So they're like, yeah, let's get the women in. No other country did that at the time. They also had the pilots who were the night witches that the Germans named them, the Russian pilots. And they were all recruited. And in total, the female Red Army female snipers clocked in at 12,000 official German kills.
It's insane. I think there was like 2,000 of them in it roughly, wasn't there? And I think by the end of the war, only 500 or so came out of it alive.
That's correct.
Because a lot of them were sent in behind enemy lines and everything to basically pick off the Germans as they were advancing. Yeah. And obviously, with nowhere to retreat, they literally just, they fought for the motherland, essentially, didn't they?
A lot of the motivation came out because they lost people in the war. They lost family members, brothers, fathers, whoever, boyfriends. And that's what kind of motivated them to do that. Yeah. Again, they started off, obviously, even though they were like, "Oh, we consider you equal," it clearly wasn't the case in the army.
It was part of a pipe dream, wasn't it?
Yeah. Part of the propaganda.
Really. Yeah.
However, though, as time went on, because of the bravery and the skill, and the patience and the cunning, that the male soldiers eventually kind of started going, "Actually, good on you." It was that kind of situation.
I was just going to say they became revered, didn't they? Because the sheer volume of kills, the snipers almost became like guardian angels for the rest of the Soviet army to like thin the ground, as it were, to put fear. And that's what happened. That's what they did. The Soviets were so, I mean, this is the reason why they turned the war around, essentially. They were so clever in how they utilized, basically, they were just defending their asses off. And they were so clever in how they utilized every inch of propaganda, like pro themselves and against the enemy. We see it in Enemy of the Gates with Vasily Zaitsev, how they sort of like picture him as being this godlike figure. He's unbeatable. He cannot be hunted. You don't know where he is. He's everywhere all at once. It worked to their advantage because the advancing Germans were terrified. They were absolutely terrified of just being picked off because nobody knew where they were, where they'd be. Obviously, we see in this book, they were trained to switch positions, you know, regularly. Often we see that in Enemy at the Gates as well. It's simple stuff like that just kept, you know, the Germans pinned where they were, to the point where they were morally destroyed because, like you say, 12,000 kills across the entirety of the war. That's a lot for snipers, for 2,000 snipers to take care of. That's a lot. It's pure horror. But again, they utilized the legends. They created their own legends, and rightly so, especially when you look at like the people that they were, you know, school teachers, farmers, initially given basic weapons. Then they became part and parcel of the last fence of protection for the entire Soviet Union. It's incredible, really.
Well, that's because women have to survive, isn't it? Like, you know, we have to survive. We always have to find ways to survive. And there's an irony in the stereotype that women can't be leaders, they can't be in the military, they can't do all of these things because they're too emotional. And yet, you know, true life and true life story shows that, well, one, we know that emotion is actually really good controlled emotion, which men don't often have because of the patriarchy, just so you know, you're all victims of it too. But also, you know, we know that women aren't going into the heat of the battle emotional, and they show that perfectly in this story, that it's the men who are driven by something else, who are driven by the need for glory or to get kills in or to show off to their friends, all of those sort of things, to prove that they are military commanders or great at killing people. Awesome, well done. And the women of this unit are the exact opposite of that. This is a job that is taken seriously, that is time and patience, that is skill, that is them, that they, exactly like you said, Andy, they are the ones who can turn this around. They are the people who can make a change. And none, I mean, you know, their motivations for joining are often driven by emotions. But Sara in particular is able to shut that down to be able to get the job done. And I mean, that is women. It really is. Like, sometimes we just got to get shit done and we can't deal with any of the other bullshit. And I think that's so interesting. And again, you know, it's going back to what we were saying before. We're so used to these war stories of men, American, British men, going in and being the heroes. I mean, you know, just look at some of the most recent films we've had, and it is about sort of lone men going out and saving us, or their particular stories. And, you know, I'm a fan of these stories, but also it's getting a bit boring. And let's have something a bit new. And, you know, this came out in 2018, I want to say. I'm probably wrong.
Yeah, that is correct.
Thank you. And yes, I got some water. Yes, see, this is chaotic. Take that, Dan.
I said that with love. I'm not saying it's
I know,
a bad
it's
thing.
Fine. It's my brand. It's fine. I've not got any notes, so.
I barely got any. I've just blasted through all my notes, just the history of it, all that. So
I was just about to say that even though, you know, this is based on a true story, this could be Americanized or Britishized, which is not a word. And it's not. And I think that's so interesting in the storytelling as well, that it's a very specific, non-heroic, complicated, but also really simple story. I mean, this is Mad Max Fury Road. We all know how I feel about Mad Max Fury Road. It's genius storytelling. They go from one place to another and back again. And it is one of the most compelling things I've ever seen. And I think it's fantastic. And this is what this is. You know, it is like literally they kind of just go to trees and sit around in them and then come back and sort of have a little chat, go to trees, maybe some rocks, sit around in them, shoot some Nazis, come back. And yet you're gripped with every single page.
It's not, but it's never boring. And you'd think with something like that, sitting around and waiting and being patient and, you know, waiting for your moment, you'd think, oh, it'll be just a lot of that. Or, and again, visually it's quite arresting. Like I love Steve Epting. I've read his work since Captain America Winter Soldier. Garth Ennis, I think Andy's read some of these as well. So Garth Ennis
I've got the entire run of Punisher comics that he did. I've got all of them. I absolutely love them. And it was great for me just to see like the same principle of artwork, the framing, paneling, the violence, obviously. You know, it's him all over, isn't it?
I was going to say on the violence, we've all touched on how violent it is, and it is, but it's a real, it's realism. And I've read, Preacher, I've read other things. I feel like the violence is different to that. And it's got that wonderful, wonderful, shocking violence. It's got that shocking violence because it's like, first of all, terrible sentence. You wouldn't think that I do communications for a living. It's got, nobody listen to this and hire me despite this. It's so realistic. And I think going into a Garth Ennis story, you're sort of expecting over-the-top violence and you don't get that. And it's shocking, but also really impactful and powerful.
Yeah. I think for me, what it is, it's the precision of the actions that the snipers undertake and then the carnage that's inflicted on the Nazis. Because you see in every panel, sort of when they basically the snipers open fire, it's the fear and the confusion, which I think is what they get across really great in this. It's the confusion of the enemy. They've got no idea what's going on. Like we said, it's firing, changing position, and it's the shock of the impact. I keep referring to Saving Private Ryan in these, but you see it in the sniper scene in Saving Private Ryan when Vin Diesel gets picked off. They've got no idea where it's coming from. Everyone panics and flutters away. And then you get the other side where Private Jackson sort of, calms the situation down and pinpoints where it's come from, where he would be. And you get that in this, and they play up to that in this. Especially towards the end, saying, well, I know where he might be, so I'm going to position such and such a thing here, try and draw him out. And they do the same in, the film.
Enemy of the Gates?
Enemy of the Gates, yeah, they do the same thing, positioning things, staging everything. It's the pinpoint accuracy. From their side, it's clean and crisp and clear what they're doing. When it hits the enemy, it's blood and chaos and carnage. So it's kind of like the opposites, really, isn't it? And that's when I say like it's gory. It's gory and ultra violent because of just the carnage that's inflicted upon the enemy.
I do think it is. Rhea's right. It is a different type of violence from Garth Ennis stories that I've read.
Yeah, it's not. It's not just blood and carnage.
When
I say blood and carnage, it's not. It's not a case of the Punisher just mowing down people using a massive machine gun in a bloody gangster's home.
Yeah, he pops out of the coffin and just gets
war.
The M60.
It's war. You expect this kind of sort of. You expect this kind of violence, the injuries you see, the death, the type of death you see, you expect it in this setting, in this scenario. So it's not shocking in that regard, oh my God, people are dying in this way. It's shocking because of the counter, the counterbalance between the clean crispness of them hiding in the trees and firing off these shots.
Also,
the Germans losing the legs and things like that, trying to rescue the bodies and getting picked off.
Also, I think what's really telling as well, and I think it's really well done, is no sound effects. No sound effects at all. So we've not got the reloading of the rifle, not got the crack of the rifle, not got tank treads, explosions, anything, dogs barking, nothing. You've got that calm, cold silence, that inner working of Sarah and the way she operates is cold, and as cold as the barren kind of Russian landscape that she's fighting to protect against her own kind of inner turmoil and conflict with what Stalin and the Soviet Union is doing to its own people as well.
It's shorter than I thought it would be.
Exactly. I think there's...
I love that. I was like, the lead is shorter than I thought it would be. I'm like,
But there is, we'll get to it. Yeah. But also as well, I noticed it was just me reading back through again, just that we never hear the dialogue from the Germans is always in German.
Yeah, I love that.
Which I thought that was interesting as well, because it's not their story. It's Sarah's story. It's the Soviet Union story. But also it kind of almost separates them a little bit, kind of makes them slightly other, I think, as well, which is interesting, the way they present.
Again, it's realistic. You wouldn't have
exactly
speaking English on the front, would you?
No.
You wouldn't have subtitles on the front. So it's realistic. Whatever shouting they're saying, obviously Sarah and her comrades speaking English on this, but
yeah, sure.
We're seeing it within them, aren't they? So it makes sense. Everything makes sense in the context. You wouldn't get the dialogue of bang or crack or whatever it would be. But obviously, you fill in the blanks, especially for me with the ridiculous imagination I've got. You fill in the blanks. I can hear the explosions. I can hear the guns firing off. I can hear the reloading. And
I think that's the word I'm looking for. Is it's the restraint I appreciate because again, this is based on real people. This is what really happened. It's told realistically. It's done with facts. And again, it could be, it could be one of those kind of, silly kind of macho kind of war movies, but it's not that. It's not the US or the British, it's not the Dam Busters or something like that. It is exactly what it needs to be. And it tells its story in the exact right way. And again, I'm not always a fan of all of Garth Ennis's stuff. I wasn't that particularly fond of The Boys. I think the show is actually better than the comic. And there's a few other things where I'm like, not his best, or some of his later Punisher stuff. But I think this is easily one of his best.
It's measured, isn't it? I think that's the thing for me. It's very measured in the way it's portrayed, the way it's written, the way it's framed and panelled and drawn. It's very measured, and I really like it. I do think it is probably one of the best. Am I right in thinking it's out of print? Have they taken it out of print?
It wouldn't surprise me.
I think difficult to get hold of. I don't know whether there was a shortage at the time or whatever, but it was difficult to get hold of. And I find that quite disappointing, a bit sad, really, if it is. I mean, obviously, fact check. Anybody listening, leave a comment.
I also think, again, I think the title is very just bland and generic, unfortunately, just because it is her first name. That's it. Mm.
And it universally praised across the board, isn't it, as well? I was reading up the reviews and everything. It's 5 stars, 10 out of 10s everywhere. Art design, coloration, everything, 10 out of 10. And I would agree. I think it's beautifully drawn. The coloring in this is phenomenal. The white backdrop and then like the sheer blasts of red, it is really, really well drawn, well written, well colorized.
And I think Elizabeth Breitwiser, who's doing the color art, I think is probably the star of this, actually, because I think having the contrast and the dichotomy of this grim, gray, cold, wet, horrible landscape and war, but she's, her colors are so bright and imaginative. I just love. It's just so vibrant, and it brings it to life in a totally, again, completely contrasting way, which I thought was absolutely gorgeous. And she's done other like Ed Brubaker books. She's done Velvet and Fatal and some other stuff with Steve Epting as well. And I think this might be the first work I've seen her do. And I will be looking up her, the rest of her work. She's phenomenal.
Just talking about the colorization that you're saying there, like, so when we go to sort of like when she's having these kind of these flashback memory, whatever, the colors are drawn and quite like bland and browns, yet
muted.
Muted. But when we're out in the woods, it's vibrant, colorful. It's almost like it's more real for Sarah in the environment she's in, out fighting, rather than being in these. Bland, mundane hallways and rooms. And it obviously earlier on in the story when she's having the training, that's bright and vibrant. She's alive in those moments. When she's doing everything else, it's not. Yeah, you can just see, you get the flavor of who she would prefer to be, and it is out there killing en masse.
Well, that's it. It's like the Punisher. He's a mass murderer. He just happens to kill criminals. And she's a mass murderer, but she just happens to kill Nazis.
And it is when she's out on a mission or committing some sort of violence that she's more alive. And we see that in her, the interaction with her comrades, and sort of like wanting to have some drinks and play some cards. And she's on her bunk just waiting for the next mission. It's all it is. That's when she is who she truly is. And gets to be who she truly is. All the other times you see her, you feel suspicious of her, as do many of the people in charge, or you feel like there's something just slightly off, that it's, you know, it's the cool girl, right? You know, she's being somebody else, and the true her is Rosamund Pike in Gone Girl, murdering people. Like, that is who she really is. She is amazing Amy, but Russian and a sniper. And that's interesting.
The red bitch, they call her in this.
Yeah, right. And I think for me, the artwork really, the colouring really helps in that. And that's exactly what you said, where those panels really come alive and we feel like we're seeing the true her. And I always say this because I cannot think of a better way of saying it, but everything's so deliberate. Like, of course, things are deliberate, you know, like when you're filming or drawing something, it's very deliberate. But I think some artists, some colorists can get too excited, get too overexcited and cram things in and try to tell a message with something in the background. And this is the opposite of that. It's like they've all gone, let's just strip everything back and let's just tell this really concentrated story. It's 6 issues, right? And I think that helps. I think those constraints, funnily enough, we were literally talking last night, for some reason we decided to watch the Saw film, like a rare evening where we've got an hour and 45 minutes to watch something, and that's what we chose to do.
What's free time?
Yeah, right. But we were talking about how, you know, low budget things gives you constraints, and that's often when you're the most creative, or you have to concentrate on really delivering one particular part of a story. And this is how this feels. That they went, we are doing a 6-part series. It is no longer than that. It's a very singular story.
Yeah.
So what are the beats? What's the imagery that we can use to tell this story effectively over a really short run? And I think that works really well.
Oh, I think you've just cemented the problem with Hollywood in all that as well.
Oh, God, here we go again.
God damn you, Marvel. How do we tell a good story in limited parts? Let's make 20 films and 17 TV shows before we get to the Kang Dynasty. All right.
Yeah. The secret wars. Oh, God.
Oh, fucking hell.
Unleash him. Go, go, go.
No, I'm not watching Secret Invasion.
We're not here to talk about that.
We are.
Andy, much like this book, you must show restraint.
It's all connected.
Hold it back. Wait for your perfect shot to take it.
I'm not afraid to shoot. I'm not afraid to shoot a man in the back, Dan.
speaking of the other snipers, obviously we've talked about Sarah a lot. Did you have any favourite moments or interactions, or even one of the snipers? Did you like them particularly, or like their characters? I've got a name of some of them, not all of them. So I've got we have Mari. So she's the woman with the dark hair, and she's the one that panics when they're attacked and they're ambushed by that whole horde of Nazis when they take the guy pissing by surprise. And then she also is the one who has the poem that the guy's like, I've written a poem about you.
Yeah.
Like, who the fuck are you? Who the fuck are you, dude? I still want my poem.
I'll take some chocolate. First of all, my poem.
I need some chocolate. We've got Rena, who's the blonde, who is trying to hold the team together as best she can, these women together, and comes to verbal blows with and physical blows with Sarah as well within the story, because she's very anti-authoritarian. She doesn't like the propaganda, she doesn't like the bureaucracy or any of that kind of bullshit to do with the Soviet Union. And Rena's like, I don't like it either, but we've got a job to do, we've got to do it, we've got to survive, we've got to make it out of this war, and we're going to do our best together as a unit. And it's really telling that, again, Sarah goes off on her own where everyone else is in pairs as well. Says a lot about her character. You've got Vera, who's the short, stocky one, who's the one who's like has a dirty laugh, like, and she loves to like torture German Fritzies, as they call them in this. Fritzies,
yeah,
which I liked. And she goes off, and they're like, "We need you to torture these men." And she's like, "Ooh, yes." I think she was my favorite, just because she was just like a little. She got what I like to call a gremlin energy. She got a proper gremlin energy, or Kremlin energy, maybe. Gremlin energy. And then you've got Liddy as well, who was the very young, inexperienced, still kind of in training, who is with Rena. She was partnered with her as a spotter and a sniper. And there's a few other characters that kind of mesh and meld into each other a little bit. Was there any moments again, or any of the characters that you specifically really liked?
I wouldn't say any specific characters. I mean, there's some terrible things that happen to him, isn't there? I was particularly a bit sort of shocked by those two that are in the foxhole on that line, and they're just getting charged, aren't they?
Yeah.
And oh god, they get fucking blown away. But then they do a thing. They pull the pin out of the grenades, and they take all the Nazis with them. That was kind of quite a graphic sort of brutal ending,
that's a real thing. They obviously, given that they were women,
don't be taken alive
because fucking hell, god knows. So they always saved at least one bullet or grenade for themselves.
But other than that, there's, I mean, to be fair, I think they're not all obviously standout characters, but they're all invested in one way or another in what they do, and so you buy into each and every single one of them. And you know, for the ones that don't make it, it's all the more shocking, isn't it?
For the ones that don't make it, it's the reactions from the rest of the unit that makes it, like the sort of new blood that comes in, the ones that have been trained up. You can feel that they are fresh. You can feel they don't know what they're really doing. They're not as jaded as somebody like Rena or Sarah. And so when they die, spoilers, another way it ends this.
I mean, it's hard to spoil because it is.
It's always the new ones.
of course,
it's always
that as well. But it's not really.
Band of Brothers episode replacements. The old replacements die. Apart from one. James McAvoy included.
Quite literally red shirts in this, I guess.
that's superb. Mwah, well done.
But it's not
the red shirts.
Quite literally the red shirts. But again, it's not like an arc or a plot in a sense, because the issues are very individual. And it's basically just 6 days in their life almost. So yes. I think it's kind of hard to spoil, but we will obviously talk about spoilers. But I do recommend reading this if you haven't. Go do it now. I think we all do. I think we're all on the same page. But yeah, I can't remember where we were going with that. But yeah.
Well, so I was saying, like, when they die, it's the reactions of the rest of the unit, not necessarily Sarah herself, who feels quite isolated from that, although she'll take any reason to exact some sort of revenge against people. Because we know that when Sarah's off on her bunk and Rena's trying to get her to be more of the unit, the rest of them are bonding. So when we see the shock of the rest of someone, say like Vera or whatever, when somebody else dies, that's when we get the sense of what sort of loss it is because of their bonding. But we don't have to waste that time seeing them bonding. We understand that they have because Sarah's so far removed from it. And so that's really interesting. So when they die, it's still effective, but you've not had to spend like 3 episodes of a 12-run TV show like getting to know them, because it's actually good storytelling.
Yeah, it is. I mean, we understand Sarah's sort of distance in the very first few pages when she's saying, "I was training with another girl." Well, she died not long after. And it's like, well, fucking hell. And that's pretty much it. That's the end of it. She just doesn't say anything more about her.
She's dead as well. The guy who trained me, he's dead. Whatever. Yeah. Move on.
It's kind of like that distancing and separating yourself from like the absolute...
Disaffected, isn't it? Yeah. That kind of way of thinking.
The sheer reality of the situation that people, they are dying and they will die. If it's not them, it'll be somebody else. It's that's separating, isn't it? Yeah. It's interesting how they've like you said earlier. It's interesting how they've portrayed it in this, and they just get to the point.
I did. There was a really good line that I liked from Sara, because it's the moment where, again, Rena's, you know, the guy comes up, he's like, "I wrote a poem about you here," you know, and all this, and they're
out of practice, sorry,
I've not rehearsed, I'm sorry. I'll do it on the night.
So this is the night.
Okay. Fuck. Shit. I should have learned my lines. That is a dream I still have, even though I don't act anymore. I've not rehearsed anything.
Have I learned my lines?
Shit. And I wake up in a cold sweat. that's my acting PTSD. That's what that is. So there's a really good line during that scene where the cat calling is going on again. It just shows how, you know, even though they're considered, quote unquote, considered equals, they're not treated as such. And it's, you know, it's like, oh yeah, come on, you're young, Liddy, you're young, come on. You've shot me right through the heart. Ha ha ha. And that moment where she says, Sara says, they never look at me that way. I get no cat calls, I get no kind of looks or advances. Yeah. It's and the girls say it's because it's the way I look at them, force of habit, because she's looking at them purely as victims, or she's looking to see how much damage she can do. Or again, that's how she views the world. She views the world through her scope.
Yeah.
She doesn't see it in any other way.
She's almost probing them, like, where's the next weak spot that I can pick out when I'm studying my enemies? When I'm hunting them, because obviously you get that bit at the beginning, don't you? Where the teacher saying, which one would you take out first? How would you do it? Don't go for the guy that's running unless you've got no more targets left. So she's almost like Terminator scanning them, isn't she? Mm. Like saying, well, how are these men evolving on the battlefield? How is that going to be the same way that they evolve on the other side? Are the Nazis, are they evolving in this way? Are they getting this lazy, this slack? To me, that's what I think she'd be doing, because we see not to bring Enemy of the Gates up again, but you get that kind of thing as well. Like, they take advantage of the slackness of the German advance, you know, the complacency, the idea of imminent victory, and they use it against them. So yeah, that's just what I think she would be doing, scanning them for weaknesses.
Absolutely, yeah. She studies them. She spends all of her time studying them. To do exactly what you said, to understand that weakness, when to take the perfect shot. Again, you know, I would say that is born of being a woman, and you have to constantly, your whole life is about understanding the emotions of men around you. But when you then force a woman to compartmentalize that, to go and kill people, I can see why all women are basically just killing machines, right? We'll need to be trained in the right way. Yeah, you can see why she focuses that and why she's so good, why she is the best. You know, she's obviously, you know, slightly innately that way anyway, but through her training, through the things that's happened to her, through the way she's isolated in society, but as well as isolated herself, the way she's clearly interested in studying people. And I feel like men specifically, she doesn't really give the women of her unit that much time. She's not as interested in understanding them as she is in understanding men and the enemy. And that's so interesting.
And we know why that is. So in the story, in one of the flashbacks, those muted flashbacks we talked about earlier, where we learn that she's trying to get hold of her family because she was in school and she was enlisted there. She never got to go home. She finds out that her home is 50 miles behind enemy lines. And this is apparent. And she gets the report of what has happened to them. And she swears she'll kill every Nazi she ever sees, every German soldier she sees. Only for later, again, spoilers, we learn that actually it wasn't Germans at all. It was Soviet troops pretended to be German paratroopers, go in, and it's to show solidarity with the Soviet Union. If they answer the door, then they're shot and killed. And if they don't resist, they're shot and killed, because they're German soldiers. They're supposed to, you know, fight tooth and nail to kill them, and they don't. And they're killed, and Sara learns this, and that's why she has such a kind of jaded attitude to the propaganda lady, the riser, the, you know, political officer. Every time she's like, do it for the motherland, do it for Russia, do it for this, do it for the Soviet Union. Yeah. That is why. And Rina is trying to protect her as well, the leader of the kind of the sniper unit. She's like, I get how you feel. I understand how you feel. And she does reveal this to them eventually when she opens up towards the end after several deaths of their comrades. She kind of understands, but she's trying to be like, if we can just keep it together just a little bit longer for the next day, do it for the young girls, do it for the rest of them. Just hold it together. Don't let them know. And again, there's a really telling moment when Ryza comes in. She said, you almost said something the other day when my partner got shot with a Hitler stash. That guy. Wonderful choice as well for just having a Hitler stash on him. And she's like, what did you say? What were you going to say? Because she knows, she's been listening. She pays attention. Yeah. And she's like, how do you feel really about the work we're doing in the Soviet Union? And the boss, as Bob Hosking calls it, Hosking's in the Enemy of the Gates, which I love.
The fucking boss.
You tell the boss. So I thought that was really telling that, again, the secret police are still at work. Their own little Gestapo, Soviet Union Gestapo, is still very much at fucking work at silencing and making people, black bagging people, making them fucking disappear, go into black cars and what have you, disappearing entirely even before the war started.
Do you think they'd do that with Sara, though? Because she's their best weapon.
It's all about propaganda, isn't it? You can't have anything, you can't have any risk, you can't have the possibility of somebody going against you. So even your best weapon can be turned against you. So because they are just tools of the Soviet Union.
Yeah.
If one of those tools shows signs possible damage or defection,
doubt,
it needs to be removed. Yeah. So because it's just blind ideology, isn't it? You know, the communist ideal, it's blind ideology. Again, fucking hell. I mean, Enemy of the Gates is probably like,
I recommend it.
100%. And you get that in the film as well. They go to make Vasily Zaitsev an enemy of the state. And at that point, he's one of the most revered figures. Again, similar to what Pavlichenko was, you know, a revered figure, a Robin Hood type figure that the Nazis feared. And then they were prepared to just throw him onto the fire because of, you know,
again
obviously
he's
Hollywood eyes.
Yeah,
you know,
but it was a true story. He was a real guy.
Yeah, 100%. He was a true guy. I mean, he had just as many kills as Pavlichenko did. But
what's great in the TV show The Americans as well, because even though you know that they are the centers, the Jennings family are one of the center's greatest assets in America, one of the most successful assets in America. Every season, you still get like a palpable sense of danger that they've not done something right that's going to make the center happy. And you're like, holy shit, is this going to be the last season of The Americans? Are they finally going to
And if they do fuck up, they'd be got rid of. You know, one fuck up and you're gone because you can't have anything that would damage the ideals. Mm. So,
no, Jeff. Yeah. I believe this was real, but I didn't know about this, Andy. The mind dogs, the dogs that had minds on their backs?
Well, I didn't either, to be quite honest. And I don't know. I've not really looked it up. Is it? Or is it just, I mean, fuck it, I don't really want to type it in, to be quite honest.
And answers on a postcard, please.
It's the first I've sort of heard of that, to be quite honest. I mean, I don't know how easy it would be to train a dog to do that, but it would not frigging surprise me. You know what? I'm going to risk it for a biscuit.
You do it. While Andy's looking that up, I did quite like the metaphor of the hut that the snipers are staying in. They're like, oh, you're women. You just go in that hut that has a tank halfway through it. And I got the sense that it was a metaphor for the Soviet Union itself as well. They would all just come crashing down if you remove the military aspect of it.
And, you know, there's something about tanks and big dicks.
Sure. We know
male Russian soldiers and their big dicks, you know.
Get your tiger tanks up.
Invading women's space, you know.
If Rhea's on a podcast, we definitely know she's going to talk about dicks.
Nothing better than a big panzer to look at.
Rocket-powered devastation.
Right.
Go on.
Yeah, it's 100% true. Wow. Anti-tank dogs.
How many people now are more sad about the dogs than ever, than all of the human beings that died? Do you reckon?
Yeah.
Like, oh no, not the dogs. And you're like, I love dogs, but also humans.
Yeah, that as well.
Oh my God, everybody hates me right now, don't they? Oh my God, I've just unleashed.
So,
cancel Rhea, the dog hater.
Yeah, initially, no, right.
Cancelled.
Listen to this. So used primarily between 1941 and 1943, initially dogs were trained to leave a timer detonated bomb and retreat, but this routine was replaced by an impact detonation procedure for basically just a fucking shock and awe tactics. Oof, God. Obviously.
I think not saying that's great, by the way. I don't think we should abuse animals in this way. I just really, like, please don't hate me. But
it was withdrawn.
We can be sad about the dogs, yeah, but we can also be sadder about human beings.
I think they stopped using it because it didn't have the impact that they thought it would have, to be quite honest.
God, they stopped using it because it didn't work.
Yeah, not because of the dogs, or they were running out of dogs.
Not because they cared about the dogs.
It was, according to the great Wikipedia, obviously, it's susceptible to its flaws, isn't it? But the US military started training as well in 1943 and withdrew it as well. So take what you will from that.
Well, at least they stopped doing it. Yeah, it's not fair.
It's just a fucking war on a dog.
Yeah. It's just the logistics around it. I think it's like, why waste the time?
Yeah, exactly.
Having 10 men trained in dogs when you can just send 10 men to the front. I think that's because that's what it boiled down to at the end.
Yeah.
It was all hands on decks with the Soviets. No. The latter end of the war, wasn't it? Mm. Yeah, all fodder until they managed to turn it around. It's Stalingrad.
Yeah, well. Oh, well. Are there any final thoughts before we come to an end about Sara or anything else you want to mention before we finish?
The ending panels are superb.
Yes, I do want
final
to talk.
Panels
I do want to talk
superb.
About the ending.
Superb. It's absolutely brilliant. I love the colorization. I love how it's shot. Weirdly enough, how it's printed. Obviously. When I read a comic, I'm always, I vividly try and realize it as moving pictures. So for me, the way that the panels flow in between is brilliant. You could see it happening in real time. And obviously you get the wonderful sort of cliffhanger ending, if you like, as well, in a way.
In a sense.
I mean, you know what's going to happen. But obviously it's left for us to imagine it. Is the opposing sniper as clever as they are, you know, like Ed Harris? Yeah, is he as clever or is he as flawed? I love it. I think it's a great final few pages. And I think it's, if anything, it's very much worthwhile just to see those final few pages. I think
there's my
alarm. Are really cinematic. They're really cinematic, and I think I love what you said about, specifically on those final pages, almost from that moment where she gets shot, it is like watching a film. It's almost like it's flicking, like the film's going around flicking right in front of your face. It's such a lovely way to put it. And I just think we're so stuck in this trope of strong female characters. I was literally listening to something today or watching something, I can't remember now, and it was, oh, a strong female, you know, she's tough and brawny, that's a strong female character. It's like, it's not. There's so much we got
force
into
of,
that
force
trope.
Of will.
Yeah, we got into that trope, and it's still great seeing those women, don't get me wrong, but it's sort of, that's not what a strong female character is.
Yeah.
And I think we see that in this, and she's complex. She's got physical strength, she's got mental strength, but she also has weaknesses, and
she's horribly flawed.
She's horribly flawed, and she's too proud, and she's too self-assured, but it all works.
That's her end. That's what does her in. That's what does her in at the end. She herself becomes complacent with her own success.
Yeah.
And it costs
her. And I think it's unusual to see a female character with that. I think we expect that from male protagonists, and we expect male protagonists to be as morally grey as she is. And we don't get to see that with her at all. Like, it's so great that there's no romance for her. There's no mothering from her. You know, she is not a mother figure to any of the women in the unit. And I think that's incredibly strong storytelling. And I'm not saying that men can't write women. I think they can. I think we all know a writer, Tiny Farina, who can very much write women. And I think there are amazing men who can. But I think it's unusual in comics to find that. And I think Garth Ennis does a fantastic job of giving us this character that I very rarely get to see. And that's really exciting. And it makes this a story I will continue to go back to. I never want it to be made into a film or a TV show. I think it's perfect as it is. Leave it as it is. Don't do anything else for it, please.
Agreed. Massively agreed. I don't actually want to talk about the ending, I think. I think that's one thing I think we should leave. I don't want to go into too much detail about it. I think people should just discover that for themselves. I recommend it. Get hold of it. It's on Comixology. That's where I've got it from. So, yeah, absolutely read it yourself. But I thought, initially, I thought, oh, because I think I might have been having like an off mental moment. But I was like, oh, that's a little, that's a little anticlimactic. And then I went, no, it's not. It's right.
Yeah.
Because like Andy said, most of these women, you know, suffered horrible injuries, deaths, what have you. During the war, and it's an honor to them. This book is an honor to what they did and how they crafted themselves. And to quote another Soviet Union character, you know, when Ivan Drago calls Rocky a piece of iron, that's exactly what these women have made themselves into. It's a piece of iron, you know, and their unbreakable, unshakable will and what they did and what they accomplished is incredible and makes for an incredible true story. So I think actually that the ending kind of suits it. And again, I love the fact that she is actually saying how much she's making a mistake, but she's making that mistake for while she's actually starting to feel something, allowing herself to feel something for her fellow snipers is when that emotional control she had and that focus that she could push through into the sniper scope and out the end of a bullet, find that bullet, it's home. You know, you're too good for your home bullet. To reference Happy Gilmore, you're too good for your home. But
what a horrible reference.
You shut up. I like Happy Gilmore. It's what
well,
it
good
is.
Good for you. Good, it's their own.
I like
it. Like what you like. Love what
I
you
like
love.
It. You hate it. It's fine. It's all right.
We're all allowed to. Down.
You're going to take me out. But again, she, like all the way through this, it's very methodical what she's doing, how she's doing it, where she's doing it. And the fact that we know exactly where she's gone wrong and she says where she goes wrong or where she goes right every time. And the effectiveness of these snipers led to them not being in the battleground, in the background, you know, thousands of meters away, hundreds of meters away. Whatever distance, they ended up on the front lines because they were needed there. Like historically, they were no. We need the that good. We need them up front. We need them to do what they do on the front lines in this conflict. And I think again, I think this book educates us, shows us a lot. I think Enemy of the Gates is good to watch. I think Battle for Sevastopol is okay. I think it's an all right film, but it gives you an idea of what her life was, Ludmila Pavlichenko. So I would check it out. That's on YouTube as well. It does have subtitles, so you can kind of make it out. There are like, it's weird because it's English, but then they've got Russian subtitles over the English sections. And then you have to turn on the English subtitles to hear it. But apart from those sections, everything else is just in Russian and with subtitles. So it's a little easier. But you just have to kind of grin and bear like three different bits of dialogue and subtitles coming at you. But yeah, really, really good. And I also like Sniper Elite 4. If you want to feel like a sniper, it made me feel like a sniper, made me wait and be patient and place that bullet exactly in its home. But yeah,
you're more like the German sniper in Saving Private Ryan.
Probably.
Pull it straight through the scope in your face.
I did do a scope kill. You can also shoot off Nazi testicles in that game. So that's my selling point. So if you want to shoot
of a bitch, I'm in.
say I'll feed a saint to your Nazi boars. So yes, but that is the end of the podcast. So thank you guys again. I really appreciate you guys doing it. I know it's been a bit chaotic organizing this month, but I'm glad you guys again have found the time. Thank you very much, Rhea, for finding the time.
Andy, I'd like to say we weren't chaotic in organizing this month, were we?
Just me.
Okay, good. Okay.
Just me.
No.
Claim
just
that back.
Just Andy. I'm just going to... I can't say chaotic anymore because Rhea's taking a point.
No, you can. It's
it.
Fine. Don't worry. It's fine.
Again, revolting Rhea. Again, wonderful as always in this. And I'm glad we got to hear your thoughts on it as well. Rhea, obviously, you are part of the massive Femon Collective. You're talking about lasagna pigeons.
Lasagna pigeon is real.
It's real. Hashtag lasagna pigeon. So check that out. Check all
Andy
of
is like, what the fuck?
Well, Andy needs to listen more up-to-date podcast.
Once, Andy.
I feel like 2 years behind.
I once saw a pigeon in East London eating a lasagna that was in a microwave, like a ready meal lasagna. It was eating it, and it had, so you could tell because it had like the cheese around the top of its face and then the tomato bit around the bottom. And I saw it and I told people, nobody believes me, but lasagna pigeon is real. That pigeon was having a grand old time outside the Tesco in Bow, East London, chomping down on a ready meal lasagna.
Somebody had lost it, hadn't they? That poor person. Yeah, I love that for my tea.
It was like, victory, a whole lasagna.
I believe you.
Thank you.
I'm all for urban legends. Yes. Lasagna pigeon will become.
Believe it. No, don't believe her. It's all propaganda, Andy. She's a she's a political officer herself. She's even wearing red. She is a red shirt.
But the lasagna pigeon will strike fear into the enemies. We must support it.
Just pure confusion. They're just like, what are you talking about? I think I might die.
Confusion breeds fear, Dan.
Exactly.
The more they fear the lasagna pigeon, the better.
But yes, so context for lasagna pigeon. Rhea, you and your collective, Tonya, Alison, everybody, Jess, Ada, all of you great ladies have put out some amazing content. I've been really enjoying, especially Rhea's questions, which, you know, lasagna pigeon comes from. But yeah, where can people find you? Where can people absorb that wonderful feminist content?
Yes, well, find us at Fem on in all podcasts. Places you listen to podcasts, platforms, places, podcast platforms. Come find us at Femon Collective on Instagram. Just opened up Instagram to remember what our Instagram handle is. Well done, me. And then our website, which is femon.show, and come and listen. We've all got amazing things going on. It's content, film, TV, activism, fitness, literature, questions, all awesomeness. So come and find us there. Come and engage. Come and chat to us. There's lots going on. It's a really good time.
It's really good. Highly recommend. Get stuck in. Just all good stuff. Andy, you, of course, are on YouTube and have a wonderful episode that's just come out about The Flash.
Yes.
Rhea's nodding. Her eyes are wide and bright. She's enjoying it as much as I am. I think it's one of your best. But where can people go and watch it?
So you can find me quite simply at Angry Andy Reviews on the old YouTube, and that is the home base of all the chaos and madness and pure rage has happened quite recently. I don't like nostalgia anymore, apparently. So yes, that's what we're doing. We're going head first into that. But yeah, you can find me there. Angry Andy Reviews. I operate on Twitter primarily at Andy_review. And I've just signed up for that new Threads thing as well.
Oh.
So Angry_Andy1138. You can find me there if you're one of them.
I'm gonna have to find that fucking link now. Thanks.
It's just dead simple. I'm not being paid. It's just dead simple. So I thought I'd give it a go. See what happens. But yeah, primarily Twitter and the old YouTube. So yeah, Andy Reviews. You'll find me.
I'm gonna hold fire because I really jumped the gun on the last one. I'm like, I'm not staying here. It's disgusting on Twitter.
But you're already on Instagram. It doesn't make any difference.
Yeah, true. That is a point.
You import everything. Why am I selling it? What the fuck?
I know. Come on, dude.
you just want.
Are you part of Meta?
Oh, thanks, Mark.
You just want to sell it to our Soviet overlords. That's what you just want.
I wish I was getting paid.
They've infiltrated all echelons of our society now, influencing votes and everything. So
we are Meta. Lower your shields and surrender your ships.
Again, very pro-Ukraine podcast, by the way, just to put that out there. Just pro Ukraine.
Yeah, Russia can go fuck itself, so...
Well said. Well said. Well said.
Come at me. Dogs in Russia. Come on.
Yeah. Dogs in Russia. Russian dogs especially are coming for you. Oh, the comrade canines are after you. thank you both again. This has been wonderful. For me, you can find me if you want to join the Pratalion and to be briefed in full on the Secret Balls, swing over to Brattleworld at www.spiderdanandsecretballs.com. Review, like, share, comment, subscribe, etc. And don't forget to use the hashtag #PrepareForPrattle when you interact with us. Please subscribe to the Pop Culture Collective newsletter where you can find out what myself, Comics in Motion, and all the other wonderful related podcasts, including Femme on Film, are up to week by week. I'd like to thank my patrons on Patreon. I am Jack's Musing, Simon Cotton, Paul Meller, Max Byrne, Mike Burton, Angry Andy, Tonya Todd, Tony Farina, and Naf. And for their continuing direct donations, it is very much appreciated and helps Brattleworld keep on turning. And if you ever find yourself in a position to help the podcast, please consider it. Speaking of Tony Farina, I'm going to pull one of his tricks out of my bag. I am going to end on a song. So this song is by Woody Guthrie, a folk music star, and it's called Miss Pavlichenko. So see you next time and enjoy the song.
Miss Pavlichenko, well known to fame, Russia's your country, fighting's your game. The world will always love you for all time to come. 300 Nazis fell by your gun, fell by your gun, fell by your gun. More than 300 Nazis fell by your gun, fell by your gun, fell by your gun. More than 300 Nazis fell by your gun. In the mountains and canyons, quiet as a deer, down in the forest, knowing no fear. Lift up your sight, down comes a Hun. 300 Nazis fell by your gun, fell by your gun, fell by your gun. 300 Nazis fell by your gun, fell by your gun. Hot summer's heat or the cold winter's snow, all kinds of weather you track down the foe. Your face is as bright as the new morning sun, but more than 300 Nazis fell by your gun, fell by your gun.